Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Oh, that's it.
Candidates finish filing their paperwork ahead of crowded statewide elections. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, June 2nd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, after hours of public testimony, the Anchorage Assembly postpones its vote on a process to remove the mayor.
There's already a procedure in place to remove the mayor. It's called a recall.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
On June 11th, Alaska will have the first round of a special election to fill the open seat in Congress. Every Alaskan voter will receive a ballot in the mail. In the June 11th primary, you can only vote for one person. The ranking happens later. Pick your favorite candidate, sign, and get a friend to sign as well. Then mail it back. And remember that June 11th is the Pick One primary. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
Alaska has crowded statewide elections this year, with at least 10 people running for governor, 20 for U.S. Senate, and 31 candidates running for the new U.S. House term that starts in January. Yesterday was the candidate filing deadline at the Division of Elections, and with new district boundaries, the legislative races carried a greater degree of uncertainty this year. One of the last to file paperwork in the Anchorage office of the Division of Elections was Representative Matt Klayman, a Democrat now running for state Senate. He said he filed at the last minute because he was trying to coordinate with other candidates.
I didn't want to not run for my state House seat without confidence that there was a good candidate running to take my seat in the state House.
Klayman is challenging incumbent Republican Mia Costello. Elections clerk Deborah Moody Herrera took note as the clock ticked toward 5 p.m.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Oh, that's it.
With the filing deadline reached, she shut off the light and locked the office door. The primary election is August 16th. The top 4 candidates in each race will advance to the November general election. Most of the legislative races have 4 or fewer competitors, so the primary will serve mainly to trim the list of statewide candidates. An eastern Alaska home was swept away by flooding along the Copper River on Monday. Several other homes and cabins lining the river are in danger of being lost as the riverbank erodes. The flooding is taking place in the unincorporated area of Copperville, about 5 miles southeast of Glen Allen. A spokesperson with the State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management says snowmelt following warmer temperatures caused the flooding. The home that was lost Monday was a secondary residence. 2 other homes with full-time residents sit near the bank. 4 other structures in danger are recreational cabins or vacation properties. A private pilot reported a wildfire Sunday night in Katmai National Park and Preserve, according to the National Park Service. The fire is currently smoldering and growing to the southeast, but it hasn't damaged any infrastructure. Officials say lightning likely caused the Contact Creek fire, which is burning in an uninhabited area about 40 miles southeast of King Salmon, on Lake Brooks. Park Service Public Information Officer Karen McKee says residents of King Salmon may see smoke from the fire, which has spread across an estimated 3,500 acres. The fire is 1.5 miles from a remote weather station.
Crews have actually gone in and finished wrapping that weather station and protective structure wrap to protect it just in case the fire should reach it. That is, at this point, the fire has not reached it.
Crews with the Park Service and the Division of Forestry are monitoring the fire by air, but they're not actively controlling it. Each national park has its own fire management plan. In Katmai, fires in areas without a lot of infrastructure are usually left to burn. And the Contact Creek fire is about 20 miles from the nearest native allotment.
The unique thing about Alaska is there's so many areas where a fire might start that it's just not near any infrastructure. And sometimes the fire can even be beneficial to the ecosystem. So in those limited management areas, what they'll do is monitor the fire and just make sure it's not encroaching on any infrastructure, but not actively suppress it. And then they can always change tactics if needed, if the fire conditions were to change.
McKee says that this fire is burning tundra and grass, but that so far it hasn't burned that deep into the vegetation.
The fire management officers that were observing it in the last couple of days described it as it's really only burning about the top 3 inches or so of the vegetation. So it's really kind of staying at the surface.
Hot and dry weather around Alaska has triggered red flag warnings and burn bans. For much of the state, that weather is expected to continue into this weekend. The airline industry is in dire need of pilots, and Alaska is no exception. Just this spring, Alaska Airlines became the latest company blaming an ongoing pilot shortage for canceled and delayed flights. But finding new pilots remains a hurdle. And as KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, it's having an outsized ripple effect across the state.
It's not easy to get into the cockpit of a major airline. Take Connor St. Laurent as an example. He's 23 years old and from Anchorage. When we spoke in early May, he was just 25 flight hours shy of being able to test for his commercial pilot's license.
Right now, I'm just time building, so I'm just cruising around, you know, go to Talkeetna and grab a pizza, or just practicing maneuvers by myself.
Time spent in the air, though, is just a fraction of the work.
But once you start pushing towards making sure you're ready to do your check ride, I'll probably study over 5 hours, 6 hours a day.
It's taken St. Laurent about 3 years to get to this point. The Federal Aviation Administration requires 250 flight hours before prospective pilots can sit for their commercial check ride, and there's an oral exam they need to pass too. Along with the time commitment, it's expensive. St. Laurent flies out of Palmer, but he started at a flight school in Montana, which he says cost about $40,000 a year. Connor's dad, Leon, learned to fly in the military and then spent most of his career flying for a major airline. That's a path about two-thirds of commercial pilots used to take. But most come from a civilian background now, like Connor, meaning they have to shell out the time and money on their own. And that's causing a bottleneck.
Yeah, just chipping away at the hours. I feel like that's kind of where everybody gets to.
Data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics points to nearly 150,000 vacant pilot positions that will need to be filled over the next decade. There isn't clear data for Alaska, but airlines are noticing a pinch. In March, Alaska Airlines became the latest company to announce a scholarship program for applicants who agree to fly for the company once they graduate. Adam White heads the Government and Legislative Affairs Program for the Alaska Airmen's Association, an advocacy group for pilots in Alaska. He says the industry has seen waves of pilot shortages before and knew this current one was coming. The pandemic just sped up the process.
Back in the late 80s, early 90s, we had a big exodus from the Vietnam era pilots, and there was a little bit of a crunch at that point. Now we're getting to the retirement age, mandatory retirement age, for a lot of other commercial pilots that came on board at about that time frame.
And there's another problem. More than 1,000-hour experience gap from the time a pilot gets his or her commercial license till they can work for an airline. Many of those pilots start at smaller commercial carriers that haul mail or freight and don't have the same hour requirements. In Alaska, those companies typically fly supplies between villages off the road system. White says pilots for those carriers used to stay with a company for 2 or 3 years before going to another job. That's not the case anymore.
Sometimes they're only staying 6 months now because they've been able to get enough experience that now they have an opportunity to talk to an airline, and the airline will bring them on much sooner than what they would have 2, 3, 5 years ago.
White says some companies are even recruiting older recreational pilots to fill flying jobs in the communities where they live to fill the void. The big challenge now, according to White, is getting the young and up-and-coming pilots to stay here in Alaska. He says many regional flight operators in Alaska are starting to offer better employment benefits and higher pay to try and solve that problem. Connor St. Laurent says he wants to fly for a major airline someday, but he's not trying to leave Alaska anytime soon. He's just focused on the step right in front of him.
You're over the hill at 250 hours and you get that commercial check ride done. You finally can say, you know, hey, I could be getting paid right now to fly a plane. You can go make some money instead of spending all of it and get paid to fly instead of pay to fly.
If the current economic outlook is any indication, his job prospects are good. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a possum walks into a New York City bar and an Alaskan carries it out.
And I was like, well, I guess I'm the calmest one here. And I just like said, hold my phone. I'm from Alaska. I got this.
She did. That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
On June 11th, Alaska will have the first round of a special election to fill the open seat in Congress. Every Alaskan voter will receive a ballot in the mail. In the June 11th primary, you can only vote for one person. The ranking happens later. Pick your favorite candidate, sign, and get a friend to sign as well. Then mail it back. And remember that June 11th is the Pick One primary. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
The Matanuska Susitna Borough School Board is considering amending its athletic policy to prevent transgender girls from competing on girls' sports teams. Under the proposal, students' eligibility to play on boys' or girls' teams would depend on their gender assigned at birth. If a transgender girl wanted to play a sport, she could only play on a boys' team or co-ed team. School Board President Ryan Ponder is one of three board members who recommended the change. He read from the proposal at a school board meeting last night.
The goal of this proposed policy is to ensure discrimination against girls and women does not occur, that they are treated fairly and not disadvantaged in athletic programs compared to male body athletes.
Several school board members expressed support for the policy. Member Jubilee Underwood said her son plays basketball in the district and that she thought most parents would support the proposed policy. One parent who didn't agree was Robin Moffitt. She has four kids in the district and told the board that including trans students in sports is important for their mental health.
If this ban passes, it tells trans youth, athletes and non-athletes, out or closeted, that the adult leaders in this community are not safe and cannot be trusted. That distrust and fear will lead to more suicide, more self-harm, more violence for these already vulnerable youth.
Board member Dwight Probasco questioned the legality of the policy. He asked for clarification from the district's attorneys about whether the policy would be considered discriminatory.
You know, we talk about A-level playing field. That's singular. And this mentions girls and women's. Where's our fields for our trans children? And what would they look like?
The school board will vote on the policy at its next meeting on June 15th. Just before the end of the legislative session, state senators voted to table a bill that would have enacted similar restrictions statewide. Anchorage Assembly members voted last night to postpone a decision on whether to add to city code a set of procedures so they could remove a mayor for breaching the public trust. The Assembly will take the ordinance up again at their meeting next week. The decision to delay followed nearly 5 hours of public testimony, with almost all speakers opposing the ordinance. Their testimony was marked by frequent interruptions from the crowd of more than 100, including applause and cheers. At one point, opponents started singing the national anthem. Security removed two people for yelling. Many people testifying underscored their support for Mayor Dave Bronson, who has strongly opposed the ordinance. And many, like South Anchorage resident Eric Lambertson, also expressed their anger with the Progressive Assembly majority.
You have absolutely been pathetic. You're pathetic, and you need to go. And I have 1 minute left. If I can make one thing clear to you, I don't like you.
Speakers also accused the Assembly of breaching the separation of powers between the legislative and executive branches, and accused proponents of the proposal of stoking divisions within the community. Some said the ordinance is written too broadly. It allows for impeachment for things like accepting bribes, lying under oath, and official oppression. Bayshore Community Council President Dave Weir pointed out that there is already a law that sets out how a mayor can be removed.
There is already a procedure in place to remove the mayor. It's called a recall. If anyone on the assembly thinks the mayor has done anything wrong, they can follow that process to remove him. The people voted the mayor in, and the people should be the one to decide if he needs to be removed.
Mayor Bronson and assembly members have repeatedly clashed since the mayor took office last summer. But downtown assembly member Chris Constant, who authored the new ordinance, has argued his proposal is not intended to remove the mayor. He says it wouldn't apply to breaches of public trust that happened before the ordinance was passed. Constant said it's designed to set the same bar for the assembly to remove the mayor that already exists for the assembly to remove fellow assembly members and school board members. In an 8-3 vote, the assembly voted to postpone its decision. Members said they wanted to get more information after new issues were raised by the public and wanted to consult with their lawyer. Eagle River members Kevin Cross and Jamie Allard were joined by South Anchorage's Randy Sult in casting the dissenting votes. Cross had pushed to delay the vote indefinitely. A mask-burning ceremony was held in Kodiak over the weekend for former Kodiak Area Native Association Chief Executive Andy Tuber. The event marks more than a year since his helicopter crashed over the Gulf of Alaska. KMXT's Dylan Samard reports the traditional Sugpiak ceremony marks the end of mourning.
Andy Tuber went missing more than a year ago. The 52-year-old CEO of Canna was piloting a helicopter to Kodiak from Anchorage and is believed by the National Transportation Safety Board to have crashed due to inclement weather in the ocean waters north of Afognak Island. Friends, family, and colleagues gathered on a small hill on Near Island to remember him on Saturday in a traditional Sugpiak mask-burning ceremony. Attendees have the opportunity to speak with the mask, which is made by an artist and represents the deceased. They share final messages that they may not have had the opportunity to say. According to Lauren Anderson, who presided over the ceremony, the ritual serves to mark an end to the period of mourning.
It weighs on people that maybe they got an argument in the morning and never got to say, I love you one last time or goodbye. But the mass ceremony, what it does is it allows you to have that last moment.
According to Anderson, when the mask is burned, it carries what it saw and heard back to that person. The mask burning is not meant to replace a funeral and typically is held months after one's passing, up to years later. Tuber's mask was painted red, white, and black with a semicircle of feathers around its perimeter, and a pearlescent moon with stars was carved into its backboard. As part of the ceremony, the Imamsuat Sugpiak dancers gathered around a fire. One dancer donned the mask as Anderson chanted a prayer for Tuber. After a few minutes, the dance ended, and the mask was handed to Tuber's daughters. They lay their father's mask into the flames. Attendees stood watching it burn for several minutes, while the unrelenting sun hung above. The mask slowly was consumed by the flames. Once it was no longer distinct from the other logs, there were a few quiet hugs. And slowly, silently, the attendees made their way down the hill. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Samard.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The special primary election for U.S. Representative is June 11th. Voters will automatically receive a ballot in the mail starting April 27th. No regular polling places will be open on Election Day. You will vote for only one candidate, and you must return your ballot by June 11th with your signature, identifier, and a witness signature. If you will not be at your current mailing address or do not receive a ballot, contact the Division of Elections. You can vote in person at the Division's regional offices beginning May 27th. Offices will be open on weekdays between 8 and 5, on weekends with limited hours, and on Election Day between 7 and 8. For the full schedule and a list of additional in-person voting locations, visit the Division's website at akvoteearly.alaska.gov. For assistance in Alaska Native languages, please call 1-866-954-8683. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Elections.
Living on an island can be isolating in a number of ways. But in Wrangell, one teacher has found ways to expand her classroom all over the world through video technology. KSTK's Sage Smiley reports.
A fifth grader with a swoop of dark hair over one eye stands on the pebbly beach at Wrangell City Park, looking into the camera.
Hi, my name is Madeline, reporting from Wrangell, Alaska. In Wrangell, we have about 2,000 people. There's two flights every day out of Wrangell. There's one elementary school, one middle school, and one high school. There's only one fifth grade teacher, and I'm stuck with her.
Madeline's mom, Laura Davies, the fifth grade teacher in question, who's standing behind the camera, laughs. Davies now teaches sixth grade, but she's still using technology to give her students public speaking experience, help them teach the world about Wrangell, and teach Wrangell students about the world. Madeline's video was part of a project where students made videos about Wrangell culture that Laura Davies says she could then share with other teachers around the U.S., or the globe, on a video sharing app called Flipgrid. Davies learned of Flipgrid about 5 years ago, but says it became a staple in her classroom in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. Then, in the spring of last year, Davies says she saw on Twitter that an educator in South Korea was looking to connect with classes around the world.
So I got a hold of them and said, yeah, we'd be able to collaborate.
Davies says at first she just expected that her class would watch the videos from South Korean students and give feedback. The students, who live in megacity Seoul, had written poems about their COVID experience and set them to music.
And we watched every single video, and my students just lit up. Like, I just felt like suddenly they were like, wow, someone on the other side of the world gets us. We also don't like COVID. Can we make videos?
Wrangell students responded with their own poems, but Davies says the experience was more than just sharing words. She says the poems from the South Korean students had a recurring theme of feeling like they were in jail because of COVID restrictions.
So we started talking to them about, like, what are our freedoms in Wrangell? We're still able to do all of these things. We're still at school. And what are a lot of places around the rest of the world? Like, what are they not able to do?
Before discovering Flipgrid, Davies says she used to do what she called mystery Skype with her classes, where the class would video call with another classroom around the world and try and guess where the other kids lived and learn about their lives. That process started with her sister, who is an au pair in Switzerland. Davies says that interactive video tech like Skype or Flipgrid help make the globe accessible to kids from a little island.
I'm trying to give them ideas on, like, what's outside of Wrangell, what's out there for them to learn.
And it allows Wrangell students to share unique aspects of Alaska Island living.
My students love to talk about hunting and trapping and all of these subsistence lifestyle things. We once Skyped with a class in California, and the teacher's like, they're all vegetarians. So my students were, like, eager to talk about the subsistence lifestyle, but both classes were really respectful.
Students have also shared Tlingit language through online videos. Here's Natalia Ashton.
Hello is Yake Yaksutini. Shoreline is Neech. Kelp is Geesh. And water is Heen. Thank you.
While tech is great, there's a lot to be learned from the people and places on Wrangell Island, too, Davies says. From PhD students to wildlife techs or shop experts. The whole point is to expand the world for students and bring the world back home. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
An Alaskan living in New York City has become somewhat internet famous for wrangling a possum out of a local bar. Yeah, that's right, an Alaskan versus a possum, and it was caught on video. Sarah Fulton is originally from Anchorage and manages a cafe bistro called Stowaway in Brooklyn's Greenpoint neighborhood. Next door to Stowaway is a bar named Temkin's, and as she sometimes does, Fulton stopped in after work last Thursday for a drink with a friend.
And I was playing pinball because they have pinball. So I was just there playing pinball and having a good time, just, you know, your normal night at Temkin's. But before it all happened, I was outside talking with a friend. And that's when we saw a critter run into the bar.
Okay. So a possum runs into a bar.
Yeah. Yeah. The possum runs in and we're like, what was that? And I was like, I swear to God, I think that's a possum. And we run in. You see, everybody is on the other side of the bar freaking out. And it was just like me and my friend. He like grabbed a bunch of stools and like cornered the possum to the corner of the bar. And then I looked around and I was like, well, I guess I'm the calmest one here. And I just like said, hold my phone. I'm from Alaska. I got this.
There's a couple things I need to unpack. Yeah. So why you, and why did you say I'm an Alaskan? I got this.
Yeah, because I don't know. I think it's just like, because it's like, You know, they're all a bunch of New Yorkers. It's like the, what we deal with, they're cockroaches and, you know, like rats, you know? And then like, I was like, oh, a possum, that's the, you know, nothing compared to a moose or a bear. I was like, this is nothing. It was like me trying to justify like why I could handle it. So nobody could question me. And I just like take care of the possum.
And it sounds like that worked. Nobody questioned you over that.
No. And they're just like, oh, okay. She's from Alaska. Let her handle it. You know, New York is great, but so is Alaska. Alaska breeds badass people. I don't know if I could say that, but I mean, Alaska is creates like and has like the most amazing people, and everyone needs to know that.
That's awesome. So, mm-hmm. so what did you actually do to get it out the door?
I scruffed him. I went up to him, so I grabbed him by the back of his neck and then carried him out. And try to figure out the safest spot for him to be released. And that was on the sidewalk. And I put him down and he ran away.
So in the video that has been widely circulated now, you kind of like dusted your hands off afterwards.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, because he was, yeah, I was just like, all right, and we're done, you know? I don't know. I was like, at that moment, I was like feeling very like, all right, cool. That was pretty neat. I didn't get bit, so I was happy.
What was the reaction from everyone else there?
Everyone was like flipping out. But then after they did it, you know, they're like, you're a hero. You like, you saved us. And then it was just a line of shots of tequila for me down the bar. And I was just like, oh, Lord, it was nuts.
It seems like it just blew up here recently. Tell me about that. I mean, you're sort of like an internet celebrity at the moment.
Yeah, I'm shook. Because this was not, I was like, oh, maybe we'll get like 100 likes or whatever. But then the local Instagram of the neighborhood called Green Pointers shared it. And then it just like blew up from there. And I just like, you know, unexpected. Like I just did an interview with CNN today. Like, what? That's so weird.
Yeah. It's like the story is like, it's a story more because you're from Alaska and
yeah.
That's like a big part of it, right?
Yeah. And like, I'm down with that because it's like, you know, repping Alaska because it's like usually everyone knows Alaska from Sarah Palin. So I'm mad stoked that I'm able to like give Alaska like a new name, you know?
Do you see yourself wrangling other animals in New York in the future?
Yeah. I was like, maybe I should just become like have the critter control and just like, you know, just make this a whole shtick. I don't know, you know?
That was Sarah Fulton, the born and raised Alaskan, managing a cafe and wrangling possums or whatever, I guess, in Brooklyn. You can find the video of her possum encounter along with this interview at our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, like I said, we're online at alaskapublic.org, but you can also get us wherever you find your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin and Lex Trinan in Anchorage, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, Kirsten Dobroth and Dylan Samard in Kodiak, and Sage Smiley in Wrangell. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
On June 11th, Alaska will have the first round of a special election to fill the open seat in Congress. Every Alaskan voter will receive a ballot in the mail. In the June 11th primary, you can only vote for one person. The ranking happens later. Pick your favorite candidate, sign, and get a friend to sign as well. Then mail it back. And remember that June 11th is the Pick One primary. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.